Another con job. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of our Institute, fellow analyst, and my very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Good to be with you again, Barry, and good to hear the folks out there. I'm not hearing them, they're hearing me, but you know what I mean. It's a long day.
I know. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are recording this on Tuesday evening after a very long day. You're listening to it on Wednesday. But today was an interesting day all the way around. We received notice very early this morning that the Ohio House State Government Committee had decided to put up House Joint Resolution 3, the Ohio Constitutional Convention resolution call piece, for not just a hearing, its first, but a vote. Chuck and I both see this as deja vu because although the language may be a little different in this particular resolution, the circumstances of its movement in this august body called the Ohio House of Representatives is exactly the same. Without warning, without notice, and without more than one hearing, they're trying to push through something that could put us on the brink of changing our entire form of government. Now, they don't think they're doing that, but if you are a student of the history of our country, of the history of the Constitution, how we got our Constitution, and you look at these precedents and you see what's going on in our country now and how we've slipped into socialism and the drivers in most of those areas of influence are socialistic or Marxist in their outlook and worldview, you can see very clearly that this is a really, really bad idea. Even if it's for the great purpose of balancing the budget or making sure that the federal government can't go into debt, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can't raise the debt ceiling without a popular vote, whatever that issue might be. But our state officials don't seem to quite grasp that yet. Although today was an interesting exercise in the power of the people speaking truth. Today at 2 o'clock, and again, this is Tuesday, so yesterday at 2 o'clock, the House State Government Committee convened with the express purpose of having a hearing, bringing in expert witnesses for the resolution and passing it out so that they can go to the floor of the House with it, just in time for them to then break for 2 weeks for the Easter break. Well, a number of folks, and a hat tip to Melanie Elsie of the American Policy Roundtable, to Diana Fessler, who is former state representative and who is also one of the leaders in the homeschooling movement, to our good friends Robert and Terry Owens of the John Birch Society up in Delaware County, and of course to Chuck, one of my favorite wingmen here when it comes to this issue. We managed to get the word out and get some people down to the State House today to at least raise loyal opposition to this very bad idea of putting Ohio on record as being one of the states calling for a new constitutional convention. I have to report that we were successful so far.
Yeah.
The bill had that hearing, but the vote was canceled on the bill because enough people had made enough phone calls and had started the chain going, and they were getting enough pushback negatively on this issue that they backed off of this radical fast-push vote. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to keep aware of this, but we're going to talk about this issue a little bit more and why we always see them do this the same way that they've always done this, Chuck. These guys, for some reason, they know that this issue is radioactive, and they're hoping to catch everybody totally asleep, and this time they almost were successful.
They almost did. The last time this came up was in December of 2008, and you caught the fact that there was a hearing on a committee grid about, what, maybe 20 hours, 18 hours or so before the meeting was supposed to take place. So we actually had 18 hours to, A, prepare testimony, and B, get the word out to other people that there was a hearing coming up. And in fact, what it looked like was that there was actually not going to be any opposition hearing allowed on that particular subject. It looked essentially like there was going to be proponent testimony, no opponent testimony, and then go right to the floor for a vote. Well, we very quickly got Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center. And if you listen to our archives, you can find a couple of 3 days worth of interviews with Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center on a different issue. But Tom DeWeese issued a sledgehammer alert, and we also got a hold of several of the leaders of Ohio Liberty groups and let them know. And all of us sat up all night preparing testimony for the next day. We forced leadership to allow opponent testimony. And by the end of our opponent testimony, it became clear that, gee, all of a sudden, the vote that was scheduled for that day on the floor, well, that was a mistake. You see.
Yeah, that was a secretarial error, wasn't
Yes,
it
was a secretarial error.
I guess that today's notice saying that there was a vote scheduled on this one, on HDR 3, will also be written off as a secretarial error.
Well, let's talk about the difference, Barry. This didn't show up on a hearing grid as near as anybody can tell.
I have to go back here and check my earlier, because I get the committee grid for the House every week. It is emailed to me so I can see what's going on. And I'm going to have to go back. As we're starting to record this, I didn't take the time just yet to go back and look. But I usually look at that committee grid fairly carefully and see what is on it, because that's the only way you know what they're going to hear that coming week in session. And I usually don't get it until late Friday afternoon, which means you've only got, at the very best, 3 days in order to,
yeah.
And that would be to get together people to for the hearing, to write testimony. If you need to bring in people who are experts to get them in, and for some of these issues, we're talking about flying in people from all over the face of the country. 3 days is not a whole lot of time. Honestly, our system really doesn't work all that well in relation to what kind of notice they give on these issues.
We're pretty sure it didn't show up on the grid this time.
Okay, well, I'm looking at it. It was marked as an informal hearing on this, but it turned very formal today.
Okay, an informal hearing is not the same as proponent testimony and a floor vote.
And a floor vote. So I, again, I'm going to look at this as the situation of when it was put up to go to hearing, they might have had one idea on it, but by the time they got to this week, somebody had got a great idea of, oh, let's just get this thing done and bring it to the floor so we can get this over with before we leave for break, so that we could all have something to put and run on in our general election. Because honestly, Chuck, that's what this is really about. Yes, I know that many of the folks in the majority caucus, in the Republican caucus in the House, probably support the idea of, you know, limited government and balanced budget.
Yeah.
But their big problem is they're demagoguing this issue without understanding the mechanism they're about to unleash if they get to 34 states.
This is like lighting a match and putting it to a fuse that you don't know where it goes.
That's right.
You think it's to maybe a little firecracker, but in fact it's to a stick of dynamite, because that's exactly what's going on here. These legislators have been sold, and we will give them something of a pass on this insofar as they've been sold by people who tout themselves as experts that this is nothing to worry about. That essentially a constitutional convention can only be called for the purposes of writing amendments to the existing constitution, and that it can be controlled by a quote-unquote strongly worded resolution strictly laying out the things that will be discussed and won't be discussed at a convention setting. And as Barry and I have stated over and over and over and over again, we have shown the evidence over and over and over and over again. The first constitutional convention in 1787 was written specifically to only amend the Articles of Confederation. It would have been completely outside the charters of all but, I think, one state to chuck the Articles of Confederation and rewrite an entirely new document. And yet, the second vote that they took, the second official vote after a day of debate, was to chuck the Articles of Confederation and completely start from scratch and rewrite a new constitution, complete with a new ratification procedure. And the reason I bring that up is because the ratification procedure for any changes that a convention might make are the thing that's supposed to quote-unquote save us from any radical changes to the current constitution. Well, as we've just stated, the precedent is that that will not save us from anything. It will save us from nothing, because all they have to do is write a new document and change the ratification procedure. And that ratification procedure can be anything from maybe a 50% plus one of the states, or up to an online plebiscite.
It very well could, or it could even just be to an executive order.
It could go to that. It depends on who ends up in control of the convention. Because as we've stated over and over and over again, the state legislators have been misled and lied to and made to believe that they are completely in charge of any delegations that the states would appoint, if they were even allowed to appoint delegations. And the reason we say that is because even though in the first constitutional convention, the states were definitely in charge of their delegations to the constitutional conventions, in this one, that is nowhere set in stone. It's certainly not set in stone in the Constitution. Once the states call a constitutional convention, by the tenets of the Supremacy Clause, and especially the way it is currently read, the picking of delegates is up to Congress to decide how it's done. They might allow the states to pick delegates. They might not allow the states to pick delegates. They might allow the states to pick delegates under specific criteria. We can see what's might be happening. Currently, Ohio is putting together a commission to examine the feasibility of making changes to the Ohio Constitution. And gee, what do you know? Look who's signing up to be on that commission. Lawyers, judges, government teachers, professors of...
Former legislators.
This is not going to be a brain trust, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be a power trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we can expect at a new constitutional convention. It will be delegated not by men who are virtuous and involved in limited government. They will be unvirtuous, involved in the centralization of power. We have said this over and over and over again, and essentially all it gets is a big yawn from Ohio legislators who keep telling us, but the Goldwater Institute has told us, and they've presented the case. In testimony today, I'm getting this secondhand, a former Arizona state legislator who is essentially a paid stooge of the Goldwater Institute, a nonprofit, supposedly Jeffersonian legislative think tank.
Yes.
That supposedly is libertarian Jeffersonian. This guy came in and basically said that the Goldwater Institute had answered all possible questions in their literature. Well, Barry, you and I have been reading the Goldwater Institute literature, mm-hmm. and the fact is we've asked a number of questions that they have not even bothered to touch because they know they can't answer them effectively. What they basically say is they get other members of the Goldwater Institute to write papers pointing back to Robert G. Nadelson, a law school professor emeritus out of Montana State.
Montana State, yes.
And basically he has written this multi-page tome that's now printed on multi-color slick paper and handed out to state legislators. But we've gone through that and asked relevant questions of the conclusions he draws, and we look at the primary source documentation, that same primary source documentation he looked at, and we asked a number of questions which neither Goldwater Institute, Nadelson, or any of the other quote-unquote experts have bothered to even attempt to answer. And those have to do with the power of a convention in general. And the fact is that once you call a constitutional convention, that convention is not in the control of any legislator, anyone outside the convention. The convention is in control of the convention delegates, period. Mm-hmm. Because the convention is a higher lawmaking body than a legislature. Now, the Ohio legislature has been told that they can put penalties, they can put legal penalties on not sticking within the bounds of this resolution. And the fact is, that would get laughed right out of court.
Yes, it would.
No prosecutor would take the case. Any judge that looked at it that understood the basis of Western law, especially American common law, as it came down from the British common law, would look at it and laugh. And the reason they would laugh is, the judges know that a convention is a higher body of law than a legislature.
That's right. And the point is, it is the highest body of law in the land, even higher than our state legislators, who are trying to pass a resolution that would unleash a mechanism that they can't stop.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, we're out of time for today. Join us again tomorrow. I think we're going to continue this discussion tomorrow. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.